Hey, it's Herbert, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch. Oh, it's comedy in your ears, which we all love.
You're listening to the About Last Night podcast with my boy, Adam Ray.
Yes.
Hello.
Dude, you are just rocking. You are just Caveman City, table for one.
Yeah, but I have this tank top to balance it out.
You do. Tank tops balance out everything. And not only was that my high school yearbook quote, I've said it for a long time, but I can only be friends with people that share that sentiment. By the
way,
I was watching some interview on you on the Today Show.
That must have been embarrassing for me. Yeah.
Dude, thank you for bringing it up. I don't want to have to be the guy to say that you make Hoda uncomfortable physically. No, dude, they fucking love you.
We buried that lawsuit a long time ago. So.
Yeah, it's nice to have lawsuits, like, you know, have shit go down right before the pandemic, because then nothing can really get done.
Yeah, exactly. There's bigger headlines. You'll be fine.
No, but you were wearing – oh, no, it was Access Hollywood. You just making the rounds, baby. It was you and Lopez.
There we go.
And you were wearing a shirt with like a tank or something underneath. I've worn a similar outfit. Definitely not showing the definition that you're rocking. But Mari, they were like, oh, you're a SoCal guy, but then you're in New York, but you're dressed like a SoCal guy. And now you're rocking this tank. How many tanks, and this is not my question, this is from the fans, baby. How many tanks does New Amsterdam's Ryan Eckold own?
That's not a legitimate question.
It's a fan question.
Is it really?
No, it's from me, dude.
Is it from your mother?
Okay. Let's get raw and personal. It's from Puddin' Cox.
Let's get real. Dude, there's just no reason to wear legitimate clothing during quarantine.
There's really not, dude.
Yeah, this is as dressed up as I've gotten in weeks.
It's all about comfy and cash, right?
Yeah. I've been doing soft shorts. This is going to get real sexual real quick. Soft shorts, no underwear, and like an old tank top, no shoes, no socks, pretty consistently.
Just ready for church in the 60s. Yeah, it's what are you like showering and stuff? Are you like, how much of the routine are you trying to actively instill so that you feel like a person?
Yeah, for sure. That's a good question. I go through phases. You know, it's like, I'm definitely bathing. I've managed to keep that up. I definitely missed a shower a time or two, but generally bathing, which is good. But I'll go through like a few days of just shorts and nothing else and just doing nothing. Wow. And then I'll be like, okay, let's go. Let's pretend it's real life. And I'll put on grown-up clothes, like jeans perhaps, and sit down on a computer and sort of click keys as if there's some semblance to what I'm typing, and hope that I'm doing something productive. And then that'll go on for a few days, and then I'll get tired of that and I'll go back to the shorts.
Are you Zooming a lot? I saw you working out with, is it your girl or was it?
Oh, well, with my dad, with my pops.
Yeah. Well, I saw one. Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah. I saw one with a gal.
Yeah, Liz posted one of her and her roommate and I doing a little workout action in fast motion, which was quite a good time. Then my dad's got this, ordered this little, you know, man cave workout stuff in the garage. So we've been doing that pretty consistently.
Awesome.
I've been introducing my dad to a lot of grunge, a lot of Nirvana records, Smashing Pumpkins.
No way.
Yeah.
Dude, that's next on my bucket list for my dad. I'm not like, he's about to turn 76 on Friday. And I'm like, dude, I'm making the bucket list for you. And it's like, And it's like getting him to know about who presidents of the United States of America are. not the presidents who wrote Peaches.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, maybe get him to learn the lyrics to Goldfinger's In My Bedroom.
Genius.
Yeah.
Can you get your dad to learn the lyrics to Lose Yourself by Eminem?
Oh, man. You mean learn again? What do you think 75 was?
Zoom that to the world. What does your dad like to listen to? What's his vibe?
That's a personal question, dude. This interview's about you. Let's get back to... No. He's a real... He's got a... I think my eclectic taste definitely comes from him because he'll...
Right.
You know, I'm up here right now and we'll just... He'll just go to YouTube and pull up karaoke songs of like 80s love songs. Like he's the one that got me into Billy Ocean.
And, oh, yeah.
Like Caribbean Queen, Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car. Very, very aggressive, by the way, Billy.
Lyrics, yeah.
Yeah, suggestive.
Or like, just outright exclamatory.
But that was the 80s, dude. You could sing about gals you hadn't met and how they needed to get out of your dreams and physically get into your ride. And,
right.
And guess what, dude? Nothing was really said past that. It was just all implied. But like the 80s was all about implications, I feel like.
It's true. I was just having a conversation with a friend about how hip-hop is the last bastion of just, I don't mean this as a positive, hold on, the last place where just rampant misogyny, just hoes this and bitches that, and it's like, and everyone, you know, the Me Too movement has been pretty prolific and mostly a great thing, but I'm like, wait, what about hip-hop though? Like literature or other musics or presidents grabbing pussies, that's all good, but like, you know, the hip-hop thing.
I know, it's I'm surprised. Somebody probably has put the grabbing by the pussy into a song, haven't they?
I would assume so. Yeah. I think it was originally a Lil Wayne lyric. I think Trump was just quoting.
Hilarious. By the way, what if it wasn't put it like it was put into a song, but not Who By We Thought? We're like, yeah, dude, like DMX had it be in his comeback album. And it's like, no, it's actually, fuck. If I had said the name quicker, the joke would have hit harder.
It would have hit harder. You know, I'm going Taylor Swift. What are you going?
I was going to say Taylor Hicks.
No!
The Soul Patrol.
That's better. That yours was stronger.
That's a funnier answer. Taylor Swift is the real answer.
Yes, exactly. Or Blake Shelton. But Willie Nelson would also be a good...
Come on.
Grab him by the pussy. Could be a cool...
See, well, you just made... Yeah, see, that actually sounds good when you sing it. I didn't know you had such a set of pipes, dude. I knew in college when we were at SC and that you could sing. And I know you always had a guitar.
Yeah.
You weren't like walking around class. You weren't that douche that walked to class with a guitar, but you had one at your place.
Yeah.
Didn't you, your place, I think junior year, my senior year was near the Staples Center, right?
Yes. Yeah. I lived downtown. Yeah.
Cause I remember going to a party there. That was, it's so funny the things you remember from our college days. You had a party and, like certain, I guess just hangs that are not, that are like kind of off campus, especially. I think I remember more so.
Right.
But the fact that was so close to Staples, I think you could walk to it on Figueroa.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That was so cool to me, A, because it was like, I felt like I was leaving campus without going into Hollywood, like traditionally.
Right.
But I just also remember that was like a cool party because there weren't a ton of people. So you and I really got to, and look, this, we'd had 3 years together, whatever, but I think that's when I saw the guitar. I was racking my brain with this last night, and I was like, I think that's when I saw the guitar, and then you were like, yeah, I play. And I don't know if you busted it out fucking Jason Mraz style at the party, but you definitely sang something, and I was like, oh, shit. And then I was like, yeah, it makes sense. This guy's a fucking, you know, soon-to-be heartthrob. Of course, he's got a set of pipes to go through it. And then I see on the Today Show, you play a song called, like, Love is the... Like time and love heal wounds. Some fucking, it was, I don't know, dude.
That's close enough. Yeah.
No, what was it? It was, dude.
It's called Here's Looking at You. It was from a little indie I did where I played a musician. I got to write the songs.
Dude, you were so like, again, not surprisingly good, but just unexpectedly. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, thanks, man.
Oh, yeah, man.
Really what you're saying is I have a low, low expectation of you.
Yeah.
And the fact that you ended up having any talent at all was surprising, deeply.
So funny, dude. No, it was, wait, tell me about that indie.
That's awesome, man. I, you know, yeah, I'm one of the things I want to do in this quarantine is maybe take some time to do the music. It's one of those hobbies that's always like, you know, in the back of my head, like, yeah, one day I'm going to sit down and make a sick record, man. And I never do it. But
of course,
I would like to do it, not to start some career, but I just got a bunch of songs sitting at home and it would be fun to record them and put them out there. But yeah, that movie was cool. It's on, I think it's on Netflix now. It's called Lucky Them. Megan Griffiths directed. Toni Collette, the great Toni Collette, is in it.
Shut the fuck up.
And Thomas Hayden Church, who is probably the funniest man I've ever met. And it's good. It's good. It's a good movie. If you got nothing to watch on a Tuesday evening, I'm not going to say on a Saturday night, but on a Tuesday night.
Dude, that's big of you, by the way. Picking the night for the movie,
yeah,
I guarantee you makes people, because there's so much pressure with the weekend flick, right?
Yes.
Everyone's thinking
be a good one.
Superhero or, you know, like either like Iron Man 2 or Schindler's List, like something that's got a lot of production value and that is, you know, you can get invested in.
Yes.
But a Tuesday night flick, I dig that. So who do you play in this?
I played this musician, kind of street musician who kind of takes a shine to Tony's character, who's a few years older, and they sort of have a thing. And it's kind of a, you know, it's her up to her old antics of dating people that are not really right for her age wise or otherwise, and being sort of emotionally unavailable, and she's got to figure it out. And it's a really fun love story between her and Thomas Hayden Church. And that guy is so funny, man. He's just funny in his ordinary, just like getting a bite from crowd, just anything. Just the way he talks is funny. His mind, the way his mind works, he's hilarious.
I was going to say, how much of it is his voice too, when he's just talking about ordinary stuff that you're like, I could listen to you talk about what's in that sandwich and you're going to
just all day.
Yeah. He's got a Christopher Walken vibe, but just similarly the way that I think he breaks up words, right? And kind of, delivery is just unique.
For sure. And yeah, you're right. And he's so particular, like his cadence is specific to him and his tone and just kind of that dry, droll delivery where like nothing is ever that important.
Yeah.
You know? And so the punchline comes out the same as the setup or anything. It's just like, just funny, funny dude.
I'm definitely going to watch that, man. Cause I'm starved for stuff. I've been on more of I know there's so many shows, and by the way, my dad is a huge New Amsterdam fan. So
that's awesome.
More fired up. We started watching it together actually. Cause he's a big medical drama guy. He's like got his, you know, the Chicago MDs, PDs, STDs. He's got all the Chicagos.
And then, you know, the lesser known STD show. That was a very short lived.
I was like a CSI Glendale guy. You know what I'm saying? Like I go off the.
Not a ton happens. It's just kind of once in a while. There's like slight minor shoplifting.
Persian rug sale that like takes up most of the season, and then a couple Costco robberies.
Occasionally, some kids skateboard by too loudly. Hey, jerks!
Hey, jerks! On next week's. Yeah, that was rude.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn. Oh, you're my kid on next week.
Oh, sorry. Still get off.
Yeah, still get off, Darren. You don't call your kid son.
I'm in college. You're 38.
I think we just wrote season two.
We just wrote a great, God, you better, speaking of that, I don't know why that reminded me of Reno 911. That was a great show.
Unreal. Came back.
Great show. Did it come back?
Dude, so Tom Lennon, you know, somehow became a homie. I did this movie with him.
Yeah,
that just came out on Amazon last Friday.
Dude, I got to check it out. What's it called?
First leading role. It's called The Bellman. It's got a little Wet Hot American Summer meets Anchorman vibe about these hotel bellmen. I'm the head bellman that just doesn't fucking get promoted, loses the girl, lies about a promotion to get her back. Tom Lennon plays the spiritual guru who comes to try to have this weekend conference. He's a full character, unidentifiable Eastern European accent, who's trying to con everyone and steal the money from everyone at the hotel who's staying there. It's real silly, dude. Definitely spark one up or have a cocktail. It's a Wednesday night movie.
Okay. All right. So we have our Tuesday and our Wednesday worked out.
We're locked in. But he is a god. And so
he's funny, man.
And keeping in touch. But also Reno, I mean, that was my shit too. It came back on Quibi 2 weeks ago.
Oh, no way. I had no idea. Yeah, what a great show, man.
Yeah, they were – was that one of the things – because I know, you know, as much of like straight acting as you're doing, you've always been so funny, dude, which I think is obviously I think is why, I mean, look, we got real fortunate with like the classes that we had at SC as far as like how many cool, talented, like just easygoing, fun, funny people there were. And
yeah,
when I see you in interviews, I go, man, I hope he, and you bring it out in all your roles, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But it's like, don't you agree? Like, aren't you like want, like wanting something that's like a, like almost comedy just from top to bottom to where you can really show that you got that?
I would love that. I mean, yeah. I would love that. So comedy top to bottom is something I've never done. I've done, yeah, parts with comedy or with humor, but
right.
You know, never the full, that would be a great challenge for me. I would love to do that, man. Yeah, that would be, you know what? We should do a mockumentary show. We should do, Reno 911 format, bring it back. Hold on. I'm going to bring all topics of discussion together in
Please.
One cosmic moment of just coagulation. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know what I always thought would be a funny show? I'm just going to pitch any network who's listening. Maybe Netflix is listening. Maybe they call us right after this.
We only have Hallmark and Pax that listen to this podcast.
Understood. Well, I think this could work very well as a co-production between the two.
Okay.
Shoot. I always thought that wouldn't theater school be a hilarious mockumentary show? Because like when we're going to school, you know, there'd be business majors and pre-med and people studying serious things, engineering, and they'd be walking by on the way to some test and stressed out and working. And we'd be like walking through campus, like singing or reciting a poem or being like, what color am I today? Like I'm yellow, you know? And I was like, what a funny show. And then some people, you know, the degree of taking it seriously, like a Guffman-esque type show, it would just, it would be great. It would be great.
I'm 1,000% in, dude. I think the mockumentary world has only really been truly explored through the Christopher Guest eyes and squad.
Oh, man. Yes.
And it's, there is, I mean, dude, you know, what I need to do in this quarantine is finish this mockumentary that I wrote about 2 years ago about inventors. It's basically, you take Spellbound meets Shark Tank and make a mockumentary where it's you following six different inventors from around the world that are meeting up at this inventors convention in Vegas.
I'm sold. I'm in. Yeah.
Oh, you're obviously in. We need you to help fucking sell the movie. But it, dude, I have a part outlined for Beck.
Fantastic.
Henry Winkler is the kind of the,
the guy who is the sweetest man in show business.
Have you gotten to know him?
Not well, but I've just had brief encounters with him here and there, and he's always so, so kind and supportive and friendly. It's just like, what a great dude.
Yeah, he's got so many stories and so much experience that you're like, you know, it's almost like you should be a dick with how much stuff you've done and how much time is money for you and just like you're, but he's so, yeah, man, I mean, maybe, I mean, look, I think some people just go through and are constantly, you know, having good experiences to where they don't, maybe he's never been put in a position where he needs to flip out. Maybe we haven't seen a Fonz flip out yet. Maybe he's waiting until he's like 90.
He's like secretly a maniac, like, you know, dungeon, the whole thing, just God knows.
Have you worked with anyone, in your journey so far that you've just been like, what the fuck? Like this
what
is
an,
little
what
did I think man. Doing Playboy of the Western World in 2005 with Adam Ray and Beck Bennett. Little did I know that I was going to go from that to
that was it. You know what? I'll tell a reverse story, which was I was fortunate enough to do a play with Alec Baldwin.
What?
The great Alec Baldwin. Yeah, it was out in East Hampton. It was All My Sons by Arthur Miller, which is a great classic American play, as you know.
I've done so many scenes from that in the SC.
You?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it was a great
Arthur Miller is so freaking great.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm going into that with Baldwin, who, he's had his fair share of trouble with the, you know, the media, this or that headline and all these different things are kind of gets some degree of notoriety as being, but the opposite, man. Like, again, so quick, so funny, super supportive, just super fun. I'm doing amazing impressions all the time, Pacino and all these people, and just constantly giving you shit in the best way. Such a great guy. And I just remember thinking, like, going into that experience being like, ugh, I've heard some things. Is this guy going to be tough? And he was just such a sweet guy.
That's amazing. Yeah. It probably just adds to and gets you more excited to be in this business when you meet people like that and you go, man, thank God that they've done what they've done and they still have this level of, you know, ease and I don't know, I'm sure he went out of his way to like make you feel comfy, right?
Oh yeah, the back rub went on a little too long probably, but
some would say not long enough, and that some is Stephen Baldwin.
Oh God, yeah, no, but he did, and everyone, all these actors. I mean, it was him and Laurie Metcalf who are two giants,
God, but
amazing,
dude,
in their own right. Yeah, and then you know, a schlub like me and some other cats, and yeah, just super supportive, super fun, super fun, very bringing everyone together, and yeah, it was a good experience.
Before I want to like ask about your like theater days and just like, you know, acting chops developing in Lakewood, California. So we met at USC. You were, I think, a freshman when I was a sophomore. You guys were a year below me, right?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
You and Beck. And did you – was SC the
– Beck was still a year below me.
Oh, Beck was below that. Oh, yeah. You were Aaron Fisher.
Yes.
Andrea, Stigowski. Jeffrey Lind, right?
Yes.
That's right. Was SC at the top of – was that where you wanted to go for acting school? Did you know that – you know, and again, we'll go back, but like, I'm sure in high school, you'd done enough theater and acting. I think I heard you say at one point you wanted to start really young as a kid, but your folks wouldn't let you.
Yeah, they, yes, yeah. Folks were wanting me to get an education, quote unquote, whatever the hell that means.
Fuck that.
Books and shit. Yeah, no, I started to kind of dip my toe into it from, I don't come from a family of entertainers. Actually, my uncle was actually a stuntman for a little while, but other than that, there's no one in my family who ever did this stuff. So it was totally foreign to my parents and to me, and I started going to a few auditions, started to book a few things, little things here and there as a, I forget what age, and then they were like, your son can be in this movie, he's going to have to miss 3 months of school or whatever, and they were like, hell no. So they squashed all my hopes and dreams.
What movie was that?
Oh God, I don't know. Some movie. So I think it was called E.T. No, I'm kidding.
I was gonna say, dude, what if it turned out to be just like the Game Changer?
I don't know. I can't remember the name. It was like Jurassic something, Jurassic Park.
Something Park in the Woods, Dinosaur Land,
Dinosaurville.
The Untitled Sam Neill Project. It was some sort of
Steven Spielberg or Spielstein or something.
Yeah. Some Jewy guy that knows Laura Dern.
No, it was something substantial, but it wasn't any of those. It wasn't a classic. Gotcha. But it was enough that it would have been like, oh wow, you know, you could probably start working at that age, wherever that would have led. And no, parents said no, which was fairly devastating at the moment. But you know, I do think it is good to get an education, though. I have to say, if I had it to do over again, I'd probably get a degree in literature or something more academic, because I don't know, the acting part, you just got to go out and do and fail and get better and just be willing to suck until you suck less, you know?
That's what I wanted to ask you, like how much of the BFA, because for those of you who don't know, we're both in the BFA acting conservatory program, whatever you want to call it to feel like an asshole,
very fancy.
You have to audition for it and they take in, what, I think 15 to 20 kids from thousands that apply. I didn't realize how cool of a deal it was until I think maybe halfway through the year when you know, in some conversation somebody was like, yeah, like my buddy is always asking me how was the program because he's so bummed he didn't get in. I was like, oh, there's a lot of people. I guess I just didn't put it together, you know, that it was people. But obviously in LA, SC is a prestigious university, like what, like that and UCLA are the schools that are right there in Hollywood, so there's an extra allure of like, oh man, like the people I'm gonna meet, the connections, the ties to the SC family. But did you, I mean, you know, from movement to voice to, you know, what do we have, stage combat, yoga? I mean, there was everything that I didn't think I needed. And then like you start to get it into your bloodstream and you're like, oh yeah, like to this day, I do definitely breathe better because of Brent Blair. You know what I'm saying?
Or stand up taller or thing. For sure. I mean, you know what? I wanted to leave school after 2 years, and I
so did I.
Did you? Yeah. Two
I told
years
Zane
is a great
I was going to move
length.
To New York and audition for SNL, and she
there
was like,
"There you go." And
bad idea. I was yes. like, okay,
and,
thanks.
And no, and we both should have. I don't know. For me, it was my folks are more
okay,
a little more traditional, a little more conservative, and we're like, basically, in my mom's eyes, if I quote unquote dropped out of school, I would the next day be in an alley just blowing various men for drugs. Just instantly.
Not even drugs, just hugs.
Just hugs, just for the fun of it.
And the men are like, we'll give you the hug, dude. Like, no, dude, let me earn it.
Yeah, I said, no, let me do it. I have to be good at something. yeah, so, you know, they thought there was either Ben Affleck, Schmillionaire, or destitute and dying wow. on the street, and didn't realize there was some sort of in between. And not too far, why would they? And nor did I, for that matter. But yeah, 2 years is a great, great length, because it was like, I felt like it was a chance to sort of read a lot of plays and sort of fail without consequence, you know, do right. things and have teachers say yay or nay, or friend peers, you know, say I like that, I didn't like that, and just play around and be exposed to different ideas and different playwrights and different people, you know, different kids that you're meeting. And then yeah, year three and four is just like, all right, the next step is you just go, just doing, you know, like anything. It's the practice and all that. So, and there's so much that about the film industry and whatnot, that's, I don't know, that no school really teaches you. It's like schools focus on teaching you quote unquote the craft, whatever that may be. Still trying to figure it out. And yeah, so it's, I don't know, there's a lot of real world stuff. I mean, I imagine that's true of any pursuit, whether yeah. it's being a doctor or, you know, whatever it may be, certainly business or anything like that. But
did you enjoy the SC experience, just college overall?
Mostly, yeah. Like I said, year one and two, I was like in, I was having fun, I was meeting people, I was reading plays, I was trying different stuff, and just a great experience to sort of, it's kind of like that crutch between high school and the real world, yep. you know, where you get to hang out with kids and sort of experience some degree of autonomy and independence, but you're not fully on your own yet. And then, yep. But then at a certain point, I think, and this isn't specific to SC, I think this would be any school, it can become, I don't know,
monotonous, right? And you were ready
yes,
to jam out.
Repetitive, monotonous, yeah. just unnecessary. It's like, how many years do we need to pay gajillions of dollars to, you
oh,
know,
yeah,
part
man.
Of it's that. You have to realize it's a business and all that.
Welcome to King's Guado Hotel. May I have your last name, please?
Good morning, ma'am. Can I help you?
Oh, my, what happened? Oh,
bellmen are clumsy and stupid.
Still a bellman. You've had this job since high school, right?
Well, actually, now I am the bell captain.
Oh. All right, kid. You ready for check-ins?
I was born.
I think he was going to say I was born ready.
Steve, the captain. Captain Steve.
The closest thing we have to a god on Earth. Gunther Gashamone!
It's worse than I thought.
He's a complete slimeball, right?
Oh, yeah, no question.
Do you feel my foot on your foot?
That's not me.
There's something under the table that feels like a foot.
What are you doing right now?
I'm working.
I got a promotion.
I just lied to Kelly.
Why would you do that?
I don't know, man. I just want another shot. Sid Whitman worked his way up the ladder and bought the hotel.
He's the boss.
Do me a favor. Take it easy on the bellman, would you?
I'd rather have crack guard melt my bolts.
Take care, boys.
I mean, it's a huge scam. And those girls were in on it, too.
Don't you want to know what our bodies are capable of?
Yes,
girl, yes,
definitely.
I just work here during the day, but my nights is off.
Let's do this!
Gunther is conning everyone with Spirifresh.
You broke into a guest room!
This is unacceptable!
He has been impersonating a manager, and that is a felony.
I don't think that's a felony.
He should be fired!
Get set!
Go! Bunch of really real G's burning trees till we low, sitting by 45 like I'm Jordan on the flow. Here we go, guess the brain is what they say my name for.
I mean, I'm not sure he's ready for...
Shut up, bitch.
With our minds, we begin to urinate, and then, for real, into our pants.
I'm unforgettable.
And we were fortunate to get, like, with the BFA program, obviously, like, we got more shows that we just had to audition for and get parts. But, and, you know, and I guess professors, we had the, I don't want to say the better professors, but professors that were more just designed to, you know, work with kids that were making acting the sole, you know, if you were a BA, you had more room to minor in other things, which bummed me out sometimes because there were so many dope classes that I just could never fit in the schedule, like a Beatles history class, or there was like a Leonard Maltin class.
Yeah, I so agree. Like I went, it's almost like, I feel like kids should just not, I feel like everyone should take a few years after high school to just go do life and go try to start.
Before college?
I think that, like, can you imagine if you could go back to school for a few years as a grown up and really appreciate sort of the education and the opportunity to just learn to sit and read things and hear lectures and then curate your courses and your learning in a way that actually excited you. You know what I mean? Like when you're a kid, it's like, oh, I got to take a test. Like it's just a drag that's forced on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my two cents, kids. Don't go to college unless you want to 5 years later, then go ahead.
Yeah. I was waiting for the Jerry Springer final thought at the end of that. Was I just too high, or did we call you Egg Roll?
Egg Roll?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a constant. Yes.
Okay, great.
My therapist is still dealing with that. Yeah.
Who came up with that? Because college kids love nicknames, whether it's frats or theater schools.
Yeah, for sure. the frat thing was funny. I did that for like half a second just because we were in theater school. So I was like, let me just do the opposite just to see.
Yeah.
First
one did you try?
Very half-heartedly. I think it was Fidel.
Yeah. And, oh my God. That was the one that my freshman year roommate did, and their house burned down.
Yes.
I think my senior year, your junior year.
I think like the year after I joined or something. So I was like, oh, perfect. I guess I won't be doing that. But
so
oh God, it was great. Yeah. One guy in that nicknamed me Egg Dick, which I enjoyed because for the lack of creativity.
Yeah, dude.
And just the fratness of that Egg Dick. Great. Just a great, No cleverness.
Just literally taking something that he already found a lot of comedy in.
And putting, the male peanut, which you can attach to just anything.
Yeah.
It was great.
By the way, I wonder.
Egg Roll might have been, I think Egg Roll was a Jake thing. I feel like Jake
Siegel.
Was,
yeah.
And Phil Weiner, for sure.
Oh, Philly, I think those two cats. Right.
Yeah,
Phil definitely. Yeah, and Jake too. I think they were both pretty generous with and quick to throw out fun labels that you're like, yeah, that can stick for a couple of years. And unless Egg Dick comes along.
Yeah, it just always stuck out to me as you're really going with that. You're really, it was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Egg Roll was a classic. Lego My Ego, Eggman, Eggy, Eggs. Any version of Egg, scrambled egg.
Eggy, yeah, that's good.
All of it, yeah.
Did the teachers ever pick up on that and start?
I remember one time, I forget who it was, but yeah, Phil or somebody was like, hey, Egg Roll. And the teacher did, what? Just confused. And
makes them feel so out of the loop. It's when you see a new artist on an MTV, on a VMAs, and you're like, fuck, dude, who is that? Like, that's probably what the teachers were feeling when they're like, Egg Roll, is that, don't they mean Egg Dick? Like, who is this kid?
I thought it was Egg Dick. I'm trying to keep up.
The frat told me it was Egg Dick. That's how I got in.
Maybe in the frat, my eyes were blindfolded. And it actually was the teacher who nicknamed me Egg. He was secretly a member.
Yeah. It's so crazy that my final show there was that Playboy of the Western World, which was the Irish show that we did with Andy Robinson directing, which was pretty epic,
guy.
Like that guy, yes. I want to know from your experience, because you've now obviously worked with, I mean, so many insane directors, Spike Lee being one of them. But Andy Robinson, I feel like it was pretty cool for us to get that experience in college. A guy that had worked in films and TV so much, but was such a theater guy, right?
Such a theater guy, yeah.
Also felt like, to me, the most intense director I think I'd had up to that point, as far as and then I responded to, that had a tough, almost coach mentality to him. And really, did that a lot and fucking get it, get into it. And it was I didn't know that I could be pushed or really. And it got me fired up. And sometimes I'd even leave rehearsal being like, man, fuck that guy. And then it was like, and then you let whatever he said simmer, and you're like, man, and then you'd want to go back and give him what he was talking about. But he was so excited about it. And it like was the perfect thing to leave college with as far as like getting me riled up. Cause like we talked about the business prep in school theaters, and I don't know if it's changed since we were there, but is not what it should be. Or I don't even know how you go about trying to prep kids other than like we had LeVar Burton and Henry Winkler come in and talk to us, and LeVar Burton smacked his face with a knife and said, it's a tool and a weapon. And I was like, I think you're bleeding. I'm pretty sure it's a fucking weapon. But like,
what did he do? He hit himself and he said, it's a what?
LeVar Burton was giving a, you know, a senior class, like they were trying to give us, get some
lectures
real life
on the real world.
1,000%. So he's in there with a Swiss Army knife. And he's like, now some people, now don't do accents, keep in mind. So some people would see this as a weapon, but others see it as a tool. You see that? Just hitting himself with the knife and the blade. And by the way, I'm sitting there. I look over. Some kids in my class, I will not say their names, are taking notes. I'm like, what the fuck are you
what
writing
What are
right
you
now?
Doing?
What could you possibly be pulling from him? And then he like hit himself and it started to bleed a little. And I remember raising my hand and I was like, Mr. Burton, I'm pretty sure it's a weapon, man, because you got a little bit of juice spilling out.
You cut yourself with the tool that you're using.
And he's like, there's two ways to look at things. Can I get a napkin real quick? There's two ways to look at things. And I was just like, all right. Well,
refuses to acknowledge.
Yeah.
Okay, I love it. That's great. That's great.
But those types of things, it was pretty much it. So to have a guy like Andy that was really pushing it, do you remember? That show was cool too, because I think I played your dad, right? And then Beck played.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And then Beck played, I think, my dad or?
No, vice versa. Beck in Playboy, Beck was my dad, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And you were Beck's dad?
That's right. I think so. So I was your grandpa. Right?
Fantastic. I think so.
Oh, man.
You know, that play actually had a similar effect on me. He was an amazing guy, had a lot of fire, very genuine, very visceral guy. And there was one of the most confused moments of my life was during that play. And then I actually had a conversation with Beck, I don't know, a year ago or something about it, somewhat recently. And he kind of like course corrected this sort of, I don't know how to say it, this. So what happened was Andy was giving notes to everybody and, playing the quote unquote lead of this play, who's a guy who kills his father, who turns out to be Beck, who's coming next for his grandfather, played by Adam Ray.
Yeah.
And so we did a rehearsal, we did a dress rehearsal or something, and Andy's standing in front of everyone, everyone's sitting, kind of, and he gives everyone a note. You get a note. And then he goes, Ryan. And then he just breathes for a minute. He just takes a minute, like what he's about to say is gonna be epic. And the more the anticipation is building, I'm like, this is horrible. I guess. What is it? I ruined the whole thing. Am I the worst actor of all time? And then he goes, you got to take it. You got to take it. And I was like, what does that mean? I've got to take it. And he's like, you got to take it. He just kept getting super into it. But without saying, you need to live more in the emotional truth of this thing or what is, your relationship with your father, any kind of like specific guidance, you got to take it. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And so I went to do the next rehearsal, the next players, just being like, am I taking it? Did I take it? Like, I don't, is this,
well, you tell me
it?
Once I've taken it, taken it.
Yeah. Can you explain how do you take something?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was in retrospect just thought he meant like just step up to the plate, man. You got to deliver, and i.e., you're not delivering. And it just always stuck with me of like, wow, what do I do? I got to take it. And then later, Beck told me that he had a conversation with Deb Wall, lovely actress, and
True
about
Bloods,
that
Deb
moment because she's amazing. Confused them too, and I guess Beck asked Deb like, "What was that about?" And Deb was like, without patting myself on the back, said something kind like, oh, Ryan's just a little different. He's more like, more filmic or something, more, nuanced as opposed to the big stage thing or something like that. That was ultimately kind of a kind remark that made me like, oh, yeah, Yeah, I was. Yeah, fuck that guy. I did take it in my own way. But no, not fuck that guy. He's a genius. I was so grateful to work with him. But it was funny. That experience always stuck with me.
That's cool, man. I'm glad to hear that, because that was, when I do any sort of racking of my brain of SD experiences, I'm like, you know, some plays you get cooler parts than others. And I mean, shit, Patrick Adams and I did one called Vinegar Tom, which when we were witch hunters. And I remember it was like such a cool play. And then like you graduate and it's on your resume and you're going into like for like Cold Case and they're like, Vinegar Tom, what the fuck is that? And you're like, did I get it? dude, speaking of Deb Walt, that was so crazy because she was, I think, sophomore Beck's year. And she was, I think, like, I don't know if she was like, was she your like lover in the play, or was she just, she had a small part, dude, because I remember, oh, go ahead.
No. I was just trying to remember.
Ensemble? There was a few ensembles.
Or did they switch up? Because Casey was the.
Oh, Casey Gleason, yeah.
Bartender?
Yeah.
Who I had the romantic storyline with, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Who did Deb play?
I think she was ensemble, dude, because I remember vividly, like, you know, remembering her as being like this sweet, soft-spoken, like, I mean, she even said one backstage, because again, we had such a fun group. Like, I think Jake and Trubin and Westbrook, Troy Rubin, were all ensemble. So it was like, we had a fun crew to just mix it up with pre and post show, even during in the green room. And I remember Deb being so just quiet. I remember one time she was like, it's just like, it's so cool to like just be around you guys. Like, you guys are so funny and you're such good friends. It's like cool just to be around that. Just so kind of meek and sweet. And then
so sweet.
Then I graduate, cut to, I don't know, 3 years. She's like,
right,
goosh, vampire titties. And I'm like, ah!
Whoa, I should not be seeing this. No, Deb.
And Andy's like, take it. I'm like, dude, no, like, this is not the time. Where did you come from?
Deb was always an amazing actress in school. I remember that. I think I played her dad in All's Well That Ends Well. I think it was.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I want to say my senior year, her junior year. I think she was always a great actress. But yeah, man, she does great work. But yeah, there is something so interesting about her. She is kind of sweet, slightly meek, kind of mild mannered, but she sort of sheds that when she does her work, which I suppose is the job. But I got a humorous story that's along the lines of worshiping the older kids at school.
Yeah.
That was just a disaster. I'm going to mess up some of the names. You're going to help me.
I got you.
Were you Cat's class? That was one above you.
Cat was above me. I'm sorry, Pat was above me. Cat Larson. Fuck. I'm trying to put a face to that name.
All right, forget it. I'm gonna get the yearbook out in a second. Okay. I'm a freshman in school, and I get cast in Pride and Prejudice.
Yep.
As I want to say William Fitzpatrick or Fitzgerald? Fitzpatrick? Okay. Fitzpatrick, I believe. Right. I think I have basically one scene, I think, in the show, which is like kind of top of Act Two-ish. I'm a suitor who comes in to ask out, how was her name, Marlo? Marlo Thomas?
Yes, Marlo.
She was playing the main gal, and I'm kind of a suitor that comes in to ask her out, and she says, like, no thanks, because she's still in love with so-and-so. And that's my whole part in the play. I'm the only freshman cast in the play. It's otherwise the juniors and a few seniors. It's like an upperclassman play.
Yep,
so
yep.
My head, swells with pride that I'm the one freshman to be cast in Pride and Prejudice with big kids, with the grown-ups. Yeah, I'm hot shit. I'm pretty pumped up.
Yep.
And
you're busting out your best tank top.
Yeah. Yes, I brought my best tank top game. And God, I'm gonna butcher the names. Sean
Casey.
Yes.
Wait, no. Kerrigan? No.
Oh, Lord.
Blonde, right?
We're going to play. People listening to us are going to be like, oh, God, shut up.
Shut up.
We don't care who
you
are.
And we don't care who you are. Ryan Agnew, okay, so Adam Gay.
Adam, stupid idiot, Adam's man. Equally clever, by the way. So I'll skip the name. So there was one kid who's a supreme stoner and also a junior. I'll spare their names because there's drug use anyways.
Yeah.
And I'm super pumped to be hanging out with the older kids too. So cut to, we're doing a play. I'm dating, by this point, just started dating Kat, who is a junior.
Yes.
We dated for like two, we were together like 2 years.
Was she a dancer?
No, she was in the junior BFA class.
Okay.
Thanks for remembering. You'll be hearing about this from Kat. And amazing, probably my first love. Lovely, sweet, great woman. And her parents were coming that night to see the show and to visit. And I had not met them. And I had just started dating this girl and was all amped on it. And intermission comes. I'm all dressed up. I'm backstage. The play is happening. And two or three of the older kids, Gabe, I think.
Oh, yeah. Kalamas.
And yeah, but it was, I'm just going to get everyone in trouble now. The police are going to come after them for, so they're like, we're going to smoke a joint at intermission. Do you want to come?
Yeah. Yep.
I absolutely do not want to smoke weed and go out on stage.
No.
I also have to fit in with the older kids.
Oh, it's a classic.
It's not an option. It's not an option to duck out of this opportunity to be quote unquote cool. So I step out the back of the theater. Wow, all the people are out front of the theater because it's intermission. We walk around the block just casually smoking a joint. I'm trying desperately to fake it. I'm trying to smoke the least amount of weed with the most showmanship. So I just take a look. Well, that's good. Just try and blow it everywhere and be like, oh, that's a great joint. But I end up getting just ripped. And I'm not a stoner. I'm not a big, I don't smoke a lot of weed, especially at that age. I'm like, I'm a novice. I'm stoned out of my face. That's not even what people say. That's how you know I don't smoke a lot of weed.
All across the internet, you'll find mean-spirited articles with headlines like "The Dumbest Town in America," "The Drunkest," "The Most Caffeinated." How would you even determine that?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Each week, I travel to a notorious American town.
So you're the mayor
and the barber.
Yes.
Marber?
That's better than a lot of things I've been called.
And give it a chance to throw down and defend its reputation.
Oh! Okay, definitely scary.
I'm going to prove what each town is truly all about. This is Small Town Throwdown.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Man, it's good to be back. And you know what? The best part about being back is sharing the goodies with you, the fans. I love candles, okay? You know from listening to this podcast, we've always had candles living around the apartment and now my new place. And I'm tired of buying the bullshit candles from the store. I want some personal touch. I want something handmade. So that's why I found Hangover Candle Company. That's right. Homemade by a bartender in Fort Collins, Colorado. He's a big comedy fan, podcast fan, reached out, said, I love the pod, would love to send you some candles. I'm like, I'm not comfy giving you my address. He's like, come on, trust me. I was like, all right, let's roll the dice. Boom. Now I've got fucking 40 different flavors of Hangover Candle Company candles in my place. They're cut, sanded, poured, packed, and shipped all by him. And you can choose from over 200 different containers, okay, to build your candle in, and over 40 different scents to create your own smell. You can customize your own scent. Shit, man, they've got flavors like fucking root beer, apple pie, cinnamon stick, coffee, fresh cut grass, hazelnut, lavender, leather, maple syrup, peach, pine, sandalwood, spearmint, sea breeze, vanilla bean, watermelon. Go to Hangover Candle Co. On Etsy, okay? Go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co. It'll pop up the shop. And then pick your candles and then use the promo code ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. 25%. Hangover Candle Co. is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But again, go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co., find the candles and the smells you want, create your own, and then use ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. I love candles. They're great for any occasions, bar mitzvahs, circumcisions, fucking weddings, funerals, gender reveal parties, divorce parties, coming out parties, coming in parties, coming parties. These candles are the shit, and they're my fave, and I want you guys to have them. So type in Etsy.com and then type in Hangover Candle Co. And pick your candles and use ALN25 25 at checkout for 25% off. All right? Start smelling better. Start looking better. Start feeling better, okay? Because everybody farts, and candles are a great way to get rid of that. And now back to the episode.
I remember coming backstage and just being like, everything is weird. Like, everything's slow and weird. And going to Kat, my girlfriend at the time, being like, I can't go out there. I'm like, really hot. She's like, you'll be fine. I was like, I don't remember the first line or the second line. Like, what?
Oh,
like, just the whole concept of putting on clothes and going out went away.
You're like, whose costume is this? You're like,
yeah, what is, why am I dressing?
When did they make this? 6 weeks ago.
This is 18th century bullshit.
Oh my God.
And my time comes, it's Kat or someone shoves me up. I'm hyperventilating. I go out on stage. I just remember walking out and just looking at all these faces looking at me and going, this is so weird. I have to talk now. And then I said, and most of it.
Please tell me you said that. This is so weird. I have to talk now. They're like, is that in the script?
They're like, I don't remember. That does not sound like Jane Austen. and so I get through the scene. I get back to where I'm about to exit, and I freeze. It happens. I finally go up, and I'm just staring at her blank. And she's looking at me, becoming increasingly panicked, and someone shifts in their seat, you know? And then she goes, would you like to take me for a walk? And I go, yes, yes, would you? I would like to take you if you would like to go with me, because I was supposed to ask her to walk with me and leave stage. So she comes over, we exit. Go backstage, survive, then meet the parents later, still kind of stoned. And it was a terrifying experience. It scarred me.
That is unbelievable. That is
never
such
do
a
that.
Good, oh, dude, I feel like I've had dream. You know how like there's the dream of, or the nightmare rather, of going out on stage and not remembering your lines. Or have you ever had that? I've had that with old plays.
Oh, yeah.
Where I'm like, all of a sudden I'm there, and I'm like, what? I can I look at it again? I haven't done this play in 6 years. They're like, dude, you're on now.
I'm you're
like,
on when? Now. Go.
Yeah,
the
go.
The classic actor's nightmare.
What does that mean? I've never been a dream analyzer, but do you have any insight?
I mean, it's got to mean some kind of anxiety, I guess. Yeah, right. Or I haven't had one of those.
Yeah,
it means latent homosexuality, Adam. and you should know that.
I wish it was cut and dry, you know?
If there was just an index where you could look at it, oh, actor's nightmare. Yes, yeah, like, yeah. Got it.
It's like I burnt some toast in my dream. It means you're racist. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, what? Oh, no. No, this is not me.
You got upset because the white toast turned black. You're like, is that?
No.
That can't be right. Oh, yeah? Talk to Tony Robbins.
Who wrote this book?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I hadn't had one of those in years, and I just had one where I was like, in the dream, I remember agreeing to do this play, but not rehearse it and being like, I'll show up. It'll be fine. And then being backstage and going, wait, where do I stand? And someone being like, oh yeah, just go stage left. Okay. Well, where do I go on this line? Like, do I cross or what? And just like freaking out and like, why didn't I want to rehearse? This is a terrible idea. It's bad.
Fuck, dude. The anxiety that actors go through. People don't get it, dude.
No. People, all these doctors and nurses out there trying to save lives, they don't understand.
You've done a lot of cool charity stuff, man, which is very cool that you've like gotten famous and like done all these, you know, you're just like, it's cool to take your public figureness and your notoriety and like spin it to good. And it's very cool. It's very inspiring. And it's, you know, seeing you like tour some of these hospitals and then visit kids. And then like, I think the thing I just saw recently was it with Feeding for America? What's the organization that you were?
Yeah. Feeding America. They're an amazing group. Yeah.
Has the New Amsterdam experience, like, I mean, like you've probably done like walk and talks on other shows, right? Like 90210 or Blacklist or Dirt or, Did the medical jargon, was that, I mean, something that you had to truly, I don't know, go to a hospital and really try to understand it fully? Or were you like, as long as I say it right and act like I'm saying it good enough? Because like, you know, these people go to medical school 4 years to truly get it all. So I'm wondering if right. it almost feels like pompous or overly ambitious to be like, let me figure it out in 2 months before we shoot and act like.
What are we shooting? 10 minutes? Yeah, I'll figure out how to do heart surgery. Give me a second.
Right. But I mean, obviously, like, but the because you do it so seamlessly. So I'm wondering what your prep is like for that, because, you know.
No, you're right in that it's mostly the latter. I mean, there's certainly no attempt to, you know, pretend you're a doctor, become a doctor, or, you know, think that you, you know, because you play one on television that you actually know what you're doing. But that said, we have, you know, great nurses and doctors on set with us to be, you know, our techs who help us, who teach us sort of the quick 101 of certain things we can always email or call. Or, I mean, a lot of times, you know, and you know this, it's like, you could be playing an astronaut or a doctor or a police officer. As long as you understand the intent of the scene and you're being truthful, then it doesn't really matter if you're using a made-up language or English or Japanese. It's like, right. you know, as long as you find the truth of it. But yeah, we have nurses and doctors who will, you know, say, okay, so here's what would happen in this case. This person would come in bleeding this way. You would first do this. You would probably second do this or that. And you might call for this drug or something. And you go, okay. And you basically understand temporarily sort of the basics of how this or that situation may play out, or what the thinking might be. But yes, it's always with the intent of playing the scene. And I would be a terrible doctor for sure.
Yeah. Well, what if I was announcing on this podcast? I got a message on LinkedIn. You're off the show because real world medicine thinks you can.
He wants you to get in there. Oh Lord! I would if I could.
What was the first scene that you did that was so like a classic? You know, like I'm sure you watched ER back in the day, right?
Mm-hmm. So like, oh yeah, great, amazing show. I'll still from time to time. I was given the opportunity to direct an episode, which was awesome.
I saw that. That's huge, man.
It was fun, man. It was a real challenge. You know, it's directing is such a funny thing because the naivete, at least speaking for myself, is always like, my job is to be imaginative, you know? And you think naively that your job is to come in and see the world and pick the shots and the angles and the lenses and the, and then we're going to move here and it's going to be so beautiful. And then directing is just such a pragmatic gig. It's just so about production and timing and schedules and lighting and beats and just such, there's such nuts and bolts to it. And but anyways, long and short, I watched a bunch of ER because of all the medical shows. I just think that was it was a pretty good one. All the Steadicam work they did on that show. Yeah.
What was the first scene that you guys did where it was like, you know, a crazy surgery where the chaos and trauma was like at, you know, level 10, and it was like the coming in, cameras are swinging around. Give me a 4-5 double. Give me a double dip chocolate chip. Put it in the microwave. Bring it in.
Cut.
Yeah.
Cut. No, not ice cream. Huh? Adam, it's not ice cream.
Oh, I thought. Wait, what?
No, the character is dying.
of hunger.
No, well.
What's a tasty treat?
Yeah, exactly.
What? Do you remember what was and what that was like to?
The pilot was, the pilot that David Schellner wrote very, very well was full of stuff. In fact, one of my few and only criticisms of the pilot when I read it, and I think I even maybe voiced it to David, it certainly was not my place then. Oh, but
Hollywood hot take. Here we go.
But yes, exactly. No, just that there was possibly too much, like that it was too much for 1 hour, for one episode. It was like a lot of stuff went down, big scary situations. And I was like, is it going to sort of flatten out because it's so much high drama continually? But the hardest thing that was probably my wife on the show suffers the words out of my head, and were I a real doctor, I would know it. And this is how you know I'm just a dumb actor and not an educated man of medicine. It's on the tip of my tongue. Just Google it. She's going to die, basically.
Yeah.
Because of complications from the pregnancy, that has a word that starts with a P that's just gone with all the other lines. And
paranoia.
And that's it. She's going to die of paranoia. Hyperclampsia? Preclampsia. That's the word.
Preclampsia. Damn, look at you.
She's going to die. And when you see those scenes on television, their television shoots so much material so fast that actors, even if they have the capability, don't necessarily have the time to dig in and make it truthful or whatever. And it's like, but for whatever reason, I just remember it was the pilot and wanting to not just be like concerned, but to be terrified and vulnerable because the character is so in control and he's so good at being a medical director and he's so you're fired, you're going to do this, and he's so calm. The shots that I just thought that if his wife was going to die and it was personal and he just that he would be helpless and terrified anyways, that was a moment of just trying to think about how you would respond in real life to the person that you love and are married to and are having a baby with dying in front of you, and how badly you would want them to live, and how helpless and scared you'd feel, and having to rely on other people to do something about it. And so that was an interesting moment to play with. And I feel like we, in fact, I remember the our director, Kate Dennis, who's a lovely director, terrific director. I'm not like method staying character or whatever by any means.
I was going
to
ask.
No, but for that scene, you can't just go to like, oh God, my wife's dying, to like, hey, pass the corn nuts, you know? So I just tried to stay.
Damn, you got corn nuts on set?
NBC spares no expense. And I just remember staying, you know, in a emotionally fragile, vulnerable place just to stay there. So action could just kind of stay in the place of whatever fear and panic. And I remember Kate, between takes, was like, are you okay? And I remember being like, yes, fuck off, I'm staying in the thing, what do you think I'm doing?
Jesus.
Like, because I'm like half crying between takes, and she's like, are you? And I was like, yes, I'm okay, just call it.
How much time do you spend with your material in general, like for Black Klansman, like when you got that, first of all, insane, did you read for Spike once, twice, was it cast off tape? How'd that go?
No,
you were so fucking good in that, man.
Oh, thanks, man. I was just such a
blur, right?
Amazing opportunity, and he was amazing throughout that whole process from start to finish. Just incredibly supportive and very creates just an atmosphere and a feeling of looseness and honesty and very not precious. Very, very open to try things, very open to just do it. And who cares? Yeah. Try one that way, whatever, move on. Yes. Got it. No, just very like, let's just find something truthful and go on. And, but yeah, no, when it went into red for that and ended up switching roles, I think.
The material, like what's your next move? Cause clearly it's working. So I'm curious for the young actors, comics, stepdads out there listening to this, like what is the first thing you do, what's the second thing, and then how much do you throw that out once you get on set and go, let me just trust what I've done now and it's time to rock and roll?
So that's a funny story, because got the material and ended up getting like a wig and a mustache and all this stuff to try to like, I was like, I'm just gonna go for it. I'm gonna look the part. I'm gonna look very 70s period. I'm gonna look as racist as possible.
Yeah.
Which
you already did. So it was like, you need
most
minimal.
People, yes, exactly. And then I ended up the morning of like throwing it out, being like, no, this is too much. This is not like a third or a fourth read. I don't think Spike was even there. I think it was just with casting, so it is too much. I kind of wussed out, which, by the way, I go for it. I always say go for it. If you want to try a wig or a piece of costume or a prop or something, Joe, I say do it. Yes, as long as it's good. The classic, you don't want to bring a fake gun. That's never fun for anybody. But if it's anything that helps you feel it, or if you think it's weird, or oh, what if they judge me like I'm trying too hard or this is too strange, just go for it. In fact, Dirt, I had brought a a fake dog. The scene took place with a dog. He was pretending to be this charitable dog walker. And I brought a fake dog and set it on the table for the audition. It was referencing the dog and them. And I remember Courtney Cox later saying to me that she was like, what about the dog guy? What about the fake dog guy? So it's like, you know, sometimes that stuff is, I don't know, make somebody remember you potentially or whatever. So I say just be weird and go for it. But
that's amazing.
For Spikes, it was, what happened? When it, oh, and then met Spike, very, very, very nervous. And he says, you're not right for this role. Try this role. I think you're right for that. Gives me another pair of sides. I go outside. I have like 5 minutes with it. And I just read a handful of pages and go back in and wing it and just make like really quick choices. Like, I don't know if it's the right one, but let's just, you know, there's no time. So just do
you
it.
You got to make a choice, right?
Like exactly.
The worst
thing you
can do is go in completely neutral on whatever it is you're trying to deliver.
For sure. Or trying to figure out exactly what they want. Just, yeah, exactly. Make a choice, make a strong choice and go for it. And the first thing that hit me about that character was just, his lack of confidence in himself and his desperation to be accepted and liked. So that was just the first thing I went with, this guy who's just all show and just really kind of a pathetic loser at home, and probably, you know, wife probably left him for, you know, probably for a black man. Maybe that's where his hatred comes from. I mean, I was just making these quick choices of like, or he was never accepted. Now this, there's this KKK thing that will accept him, so he finds acceptance here, and he's got a posture to be a tough guy because he isn't, because he's, you know, and anyways, and so just kind of winged it, and it was great. And of course then Spike gives you thoughts, notes, try a little this or that, and very insightful sort of thoughts to play with that help you tap into what he's going for. And then yeah, he was kind enough to let me come play, and it was a great experience,
man. Dude, yeah, that was. And then you guys, did you go to the Oscars?
I did not go to the Oscars. No, but yes, the film went, and Spike won with Kevin for screenplay, which was amazing.
So crazy,
fun to see him jump up on stage with Sam Jackson. That was pretty cool.
Are those award shows in general cool? Are you, do you dig them? Do you, was your first one overwhelming and like? But then, and so cool, and then you kind of settle in, and now it's just like old news, or do you get jacked up? Because I hear some people being like, I go because I have to, but it's, the parties are okay, but I'm like, I show up for 30 minutes, and I bounce because I'm not social. But you're a social right. dude, and I assume the schmoozing, if you can show off that side of yourself too, like I'm sure it does help, so why wouldn't you do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I don't go to a lot of those, but I've been to, you know, SAGs and Golden Globes, Indie Spirit. I've been to a few. And, you know, I mean, here's the thing. I've never been nominated as an individual at these. I've been nominated a handful of times for an ensemble award, like SAG Ensemble or Dope. Indie Spirit as well, and things like that, which is amazing. And I'm like, you know, obviously very, very proud to be nominated anyway. But I think it would be different if you were going, you know, in the best supporting or best actor category, or something where you were, then you would be really there
with a purpose,
more for a reason, hopefully for something you're proud of that you would like to see get the attention.
Well, CSI Glendale. Thing,
yes, exactly. Yes.
Like, that's what you're alluding to, is that if something
best show idea goes to Adam Ray and Ryan Eggel for CSI Glendale shoplifting episode. genius award these men.
That's cool. Yeah, have you you know, I've heard pretty crazy. Jerry Ferrara told me a story about like peeing next to De Niro and Pacino in the bathroom at the Golden Globes. I mean, right. Have you been any sort of been involved in any urinal sandwich stories? By the way, urinal sandwich.
I have been in a three-way with Bob and Al in the bathroom. It was no accident. It was we decided we would meet at midnight in the men's room, and we would just see what happened. No, you see every actor, actress under the sun. I mean, you know, once in a while it's cool because you get to meet someone you really admire. I honestly forget which one it was, but it was shortly after, it might have been the year after actor Mahershala Ali won for Moonlight. He won for Moonlight, right?
Yeah.
Supporting?
And
I just loved that film and loved him, still love him. And he's just such a fan. And so you never want to be obnoxious or annoying, especially those things like people are working, they have stuff to do. But just said hi and told him I really appreciate his work and stuff. And then you end up chatting with him for 2 minutes, you know, just a quick, nothing special, just a quick, oh, thanks, man. It means a lot, and say this or that. And it's just fun. And then it's fun to meet sort of folks you look up to and admire in that way. And then not be total dicks to you is always kind of fun.
Well, being in Amsterdam just got renewed for season 3, right?
That's right. Yes. Yes. Three. We finished 2 and then 3 is coming back. Yeah.
Dude, that's crazy. I feel like once you get to this 3-season mark, man, you're kind of coasting. And the show speaks for itself. You're so good. The cast is dope. It's like, look, you always need a medical drama and, like, one that's got heart and, like, good characters. And, again, to hit that season 3 mark, like, I don't know if you're superstitious or how you feel, but when you guys finish season 2, were you like, yeah, like, it's like we're jamming, like we're like now there's just more room to grow? So were you like shocked when you got the call for season 3, or were you like elated? Were you horny? Like what was the emotion?
Yes, I got a stiff. No, I'm kidding. NBC picked us up for 3 seasons, for season 3, 4, and 5.
Dude, thank you for correcting me. I thought that's what I saw, and I didn't want to say it, and then have to be like, you fucking egg dick. But no, it is.
Exactly. Dude, it's not that exciting. It's just one.
Dude, okay, thank God. That's fucking bonkers.
It's amazing. And, you know, there's new leadership at NBC, and, you know, television's been changing I guess it's always changing, but, you know, with the advent of streaming and sort of subscription-based content and stuff. And everybody's moving to creating and owning their own original content. Netflix wants to make more Netflix stuff. Amazon wants to make more Amazon stuff. NBC wants to make more NBC stuff that's theirs, and they're launching Peacock and everything. So I think, you know, the show's doing well here and internationally as well. And like you said, there's always a home for a good medical drama. And I think they wanted to give support to David and the writers and the producers and everybody, and let them know that they can build on it. And
3 more. Yeah, it's exciting. That's kind of crazy. What were you? I mean, I don't feel like you hear that often where it's like you get picked up for 3 more. It's usually
no.
A couple more eps, maybe even a couple more scenes. They're like, we're going to order 2 more scenes of The Middle with Patricia Heaton. Right. All right. Whatever.
Oh, Patricia Arquette. Does she use that her show?
The Middle. No, Patricia. It's the woman from Everybody Loves Raymond. I think it's Patricia Heaton. I'm going Patricia Heaton for the win.
Let's go with that. Remini? Remini?
No, that's King of Queens.
Okay. I'm mixed up. Forget it.
Wait, so, okay.
By the way, right now, Leah Remini is at home going, medical drama? No, not that guy. Like, she's doing the same thing to me. Let's just be very clear. She's like, the guy who wears the scrubs. The guy with the stupid hair and the tank top and the beard.
Yeah.
The funny looking guy.
Didn't he get kicked out of Mumford and Sons? Okay.
I saw that guy Blonson went in an alley because he dropped out of school.
His parents told him to, so at least he was
said.
No,
he
but
wouldn't
so
listen.
Do you go extra cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs when you get 3 seasons in one call?
Yes. I mean, you know, not to be disparaging at all or to be ungrateful, but there's also a bit of terror too, because you're like, holy crap, you know, like this thing's going to be here for a long time. But it gives you the freedom to then settle into like, you want to invest in the show more. I mean, me personally, it makes me want to go, all right, well, I'd like to be involved and give my 2 cents. Not that they need it at all, but just to sort of figure out, you know, you don't want to, you know, it's a network. Medical drama, so it is what it is, but you still want to figure out how to not do sort of exactly the same episode every time and figure out at least between seasons sort of what's different to play with, or what's something where you can push the material to new territory, because not just for the for the audience wants that too, to see something develop.
That's awesome. I think it gives, I dig that you have that feeling, because that is like, if you are at the helm of it and going to be involved for that long, it's like, and you are a creative guy. It's like, you can't help but be on set, offset, thinking of when you're invested in the story and everything that much, you can't help but have ideas. And it's like, hey man, it'd be cool if some of those could get heard.
It, and they're very cool about letting me and I think others contribute and feel heard and sometimes listening and sometimes saying no, we disagree with that, which is their right too. But they're pretty collaborative, which is nice. You don't always get that. And David Schellner in particular is very very egoless, warm, collaborative guy, and that's rare in his position, so it's nice.
This is personally great for me because I've written about 60 different New Amsterdam log lines. I didn't know if I was going to get a chance to
hoping to throw at you
pitch them, and now I got 3 seasons worth of chances. It's kind of like
One of them's going to make it. I mean, just on the law of averages alone. Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, let me just go ahead and read you a few here real quick.
Okay, great, great.
Okay, guy walks into 7-Eleven, gets head blown off.
Okay.
Second one, guy sprains ankle getting out of Uber, fucks Uber driver. The third one, guy has kid, psych. Fourth one, guy gets divorced, then remarried, then divorced again, then starts pinball machine arcade company.
Great.
That one I think I wrote when I was half asleep. Guy eats pizza. Guy eats pizza, wakes up in ocean. So look, I can email you these directly.
Yeah, no, good. Email's fine. You can text them. If you want to just write them down and put them in a bottle and just send it out to sea, and it should at some point reach. You know,
I'm picking up on your sarcasm, Egg Dick, and I'm not a fan. This is me.
Look at him, stupid, dumb guy, Ray. All right, equally clever.
Dude, I'm getting triggered. I was hoping for a spit take.
It's all over the screen. Yeah, that would have been great.
A few more minutes. I want to ask you real quick, and thanks. By the way, it's great to see your face, man.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
And it's rare. It's very, I don't know if this happens for you a lot, but like, you know, you seem like, again, someone that can pick up where things left off and like, you know, yes and be chummy with whoever's in your space. But like, I think it's always a really cool sign when, you know, we've texted over the years and stayed in touch and followed each other's shit. But like, to have a chat like this and have it be so fun, it's like, oh, fuck yeah, dude. You know?
For likewise, man. No, it's a good time. And Praddy, I want to hear more about the podcast thing. And I mean, the podcast space is an exciting space these days. I feel like there's a lot of great ones. And how's it all going?
Well, you know, when we're making Logline 5 next season, we can dive into it more. I can tell you about it now, but no, I could, dude. I mean, it's something that, you know, if this thing continues for a minute, like you should jump into it in some fashion, man. Because not only with your, listening capabilities, but like you got a lot of people at your disposal that I bet would love to jam with you. You know,
it'd be fun. The thing about a podcast, if I was ever to start a podcast, it requires a degree of honesty that would be
I know
a leap to make. That I'm fairly private-ish. I don't do a lot of me stuff out there. I can't even say it. I become so uncomfortable talking about it. But when you're working, you have a character to hide behind and stuff. And even when you do an interview, it's like it's about a project and stuff. But I feel like with a podcast, you got to be yourself. You got to be present and open and vulnerable and honest and all that stuff. And I don't want the truth to come out about me. The truth. About my sex dungeon. I can't have people knowing about that.
Well, that's out, because let's be honest. People have subscriptions to a lot of sites, and they've seen. Also, look, if you didn't blog about it, I don't think it would be such an open thing.
The fact that I started a subscription-based fan-only account to my that was a bad move.
Dude, I Googled fun water slides for the summertime, and Egg Dick Sex Dungeon came up. So you want to talk about... You're not in the advertising world. And
oh, Lord.
Yeah. So, no, I hear you, dude. I'm constantly trying to push myself to be more, because there's certain things that I'm just like, you know, like my buddy Theo Vaughn will openly talk about not jerking off for like a month and dive in.
Right.
And I'm like, man, that's just not, A, it's not something that truly interests me to talk about that part of me. A, I'm not definitely going a month, but also it's like, I don't know. I I'm always interested in finding the funny in other things, but unfortunately, right, the podcast world, people truly latch on. Winnie Cummings has gotten really good at this, about being just so raw and open on every front, and almost exposing too much to where you're like annoyed, but you can't stop watching, you know?
Right, so right.
It's finding that balance.
As for me, as a listener, or as an audience member of you know, that's when I connect. That's when I'm in, because, you know, it's like stand-up too. I mean, it's like comedy really in general, a great stand-up. I just watched Jerry Seinfeld's new thing the other night. Anybody, it's like they say things that you've thought or felt at some point on a certain degree. Maybe they frame it in a new way or a different way, or sort of remind you that you have even had that thing. Oh yeah, that's happened to me too. I mean, there's so much relatability that makes comedy funny, and I think makes any material, drama, a podcast, interesting. It makes you want to invest because you connect on that personal level, and that's sort of the relief of it. It's almost like therapy in a way, where you're like, oh God, I'm not alone. I, you know, somebody else feels that way too, or somebody else had that experience, or you know what I mean. And that's the great thing about it, I think.
Have you, when did New York grab you? You know what I'm saying? Like, because an LA boy and lived there for so long, worked there for so long, but now you've been there 7.5 years, right?
Maybe. Yeah, eight. Yeah, totally. That's right.
When did you like?
I was always.
Yeah.
No, you go.
No, fuck
no,
me, dude.
That's it. You know what? Let's agree to not speak. Agree to not speak anymore, period. Ever again, though. I mean, ever.
Dude, this is where it happens. Wait, so what? Because I've been in New York many a times for stand-up and only been there truly, you know, lived there for a little bit with the girl after college for about 6-7 months to try to maybe live there. I was doing open mics and working, and it wasn't the New York experience that it was great for that time, but now I go, oh, I could only be here for shows, or if I had a gig, like a really solid acting gig like you got that allowed me to get immersed in living there.
And, for sure.
And when did you really feel like, oh, this is home now, and I have a grasp on the subway system, and I don't get phased when people scream at me on the street, and I have almost picked up some of that New York tude.
Right, for sure. Man, I was, as a kid, I always idolized New York. Not even entirely sure why. I just had the energy. I just remember the first time I flew there as a kid, we were on like a family trip or something. The first time, I just was like, what is this place? It's just full of, sounds so stupid, but it's full of buildings and people and the cabs and the lights and the theater. I mean, especially because I was interested in theater, even if I didn't know why yet or what it was all about. I just was like, that's amazing. There's all these theaters and you can get a hot dog right on the street, like just right on the street. This is anarchy.
Yeah.
And just the energy of that town always appealed to me. And then, you know, with college, I actually was going to go to either NYU or a C in LA. And I ended up sort of accepting to NYU because I didn't have the heart to be like, I'm not going to go. Because I just figured it would be better to sort of figure there was more opportunity in LA. So did that. But then, then got a show that took me to New York, which was Blacklist. Ironically, I had been spending half my year in New York and was thinking, you know what, I think I'm going to move here full time. And then got an opportunity. It took me perfect timing, and let's go. Dove in, and I don't know, man. I love that city. Every time I go back, I'm always, it's such a romantic city. You know the beginning of Manhattan, Woody Allen film, where he you know, idolized the city all out of proportion. That's me. I love that too.
A quick Mary fuck kill with Ryan Matthews from 90210, your character, Tom Keen, your Blacklist character, Max Goodwin, your New Amsterdam character. Mary fuck kill.
That is okay. You know what? It's actually very easy.
Or did Hoda already ask you this question?
Just this morning. Sorry. You can Google it, but I can't answer it. I would have to kill Ryan Matthews from 90210. My apologies to any fans of that guy. I just,
by the way, that was when the heartthrob, I mean, you stepped right into it, dude.
Such a boner. I on Instagram, somebody very sweetly made a collage of different like looks, and there was a bunch of 90210 looks, and my hair was like, I mean, this is like, you know, when we graduated, I mean, this is early 2000s or
I was 05, so you were what, 06?
06, yes. Okay, so this is, you know, 2008 or something, and I have this hair like it's 1985, like I'm on Saved by the Bell and just like, oh, it was the 80s. Like, no, it was the late 2000s. And like, it just looked like an asshole. I'm like, well, why? Who let my hair look like that?
Who let the dogs out? Who let
Eggle? And now it looks like this.
Dude.
So good. So really very good.
Well, they let you keep it like this for, oh wait, finish the.
Oh yeah. First. Okay. Then I would, so I would kill Ryan Matthews. I would have to have one night of passionate lovemaking with Tom Keene from Blacklist, because he's a little more dangerous. He's a bit of a, you know, kind of a badass, a bit of a dark figure there. And then I would, of course, marry Max Goodwin, because he's a kind, generous, good thoughtful guy. Man. He runs a hospital. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Can't be a bad guy and run a hospital.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. Well, you could. But be a different story.
Boy, ask Dr. Fauci about that one. Sorry to get political on you, dude. No. Hey man, this has been a fucking treat. You're the man.
Yeah, buddy. Thanks for having me. Keep up the good work. Are you coming back to New York to do stand up anytime soon?
You know, I just actually got
when life resumes, of course.
Well, yeah, so I'm doing a club in Utah at the end of the month, and then Arizona right after that. So clubs are, it's not gonna be a full on comeback, but it's gonna be like third capacity. Like masks and sanitizing stations, people seated, you know.
Are you going to stand up with the mask? Because you've got to take the mask off to get
I'm not wearing a mask, dude.
No,
I'm probably
going
to buy my own mic, though, honestly,
right,
and bring it to wherever I go, because I don't want to wait for them to provide it and share the
You don't want to wet wipe off the last just all over that thing.
And it's not even that I don't want to share the spit of another comic. I don't want to share the spit of a comic that's below me. But it's no, it's not true. But it's a safety thing. But it's exciting, but it's also scary, man. Some people are jumping full in and filling up their calendar right now as much as they can to kind of get ahead of it. But yeah, man. I mean, New York is definitely on the docket. But last time I was out there was September. I did Radio City with Dan Cook, and that was bonkers.
Dope. I bet that was crazy.
Man, it looks like a matte painting. You walk out and it's just like, it doesn't look real. And then you get a couple laughs and you're like, okay, it's just a show. But the wave, I mean, I've only seen Chappelle there three times. So it's way up on a pedestal. Yeah.
Right.
And it's just so big and it's so deep too. We're still talking about Radio City.
That's one of the most beautiful.
Yeah.
It's one of the most beautiful venues in the world. I love that space.
Do you try, real quick, do you try to go to a lot of, like that also feels like something that, because it's in your backyard, maybe you take it for granted, but shows, not only comedy, but Broadway, because it seems like, obviously, there's always new things coming up, so you really have no shortage.
Not as much as I should, and the shooting a television show, you know, is the schedule is crazy. It's just nonstop, and you don't have as much.
You're working,
Oh, great, you're doing a show, good for you.
Ooh, three seasons, three more seasons.
But no, I mean, I was last time I was at, I think it was Radio City, or was it Beacon? I saw Wilco. Oh, no. Either way, I saw Jerry Seinfeld at the Beacon, which I think he was doing a lot of material that went into this.
Well, that's special when he taped the special. Out.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. Oh, and that venue's crazy.
He's great. I saw him live do the bit about your cell phone dying and if I don't make it and collapsing on stage. Just such a great bit. So true. But yeah, no, I should more, but I still do, you know, we drive across the Brooklyn Bridge to go to work or whatever. And I do often look out and just go, man, that's a good looking town.
You dude, if anyone ever says Ryan Eggroll does not know how to close out a podcast, I'm going to send them this clip, dude, because you literally go, I look out the window, drive over the Brooklyn Bridge and God damn, that's a pretty town. Dude, I should have just turned the mics off. That was fucking.
You should have unplugged. Just pulled the plug, man.
Oh, dude. New Amsterdam's is every
two. God knows when we come back, but it was Tuesday evening at 10, right?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Let's hope that's right. If it's wrong, I just got fired.
No, you know what? Here we go. New Amsterdam. When did I feel like I just watched it. So,
Tuesday at 10, right? If I get this wrong, right. Shame on me.
Airs. Fuck.
Perfect. No, you should go out there. Airs, fuck, cut. Just thank you for listening to the Adam Ray Show.
Oh my God, I wish it was called that. Fuck, is it too late to change it?
No.
Oh boy, you know what? I'll put it in the front. But
we'll put it in there. Let's go with Tuesday at 10. And if it's a different time, you have Google.
You have,
right?
Google.
People,
dude,
have Google.
Look
people
it up. If you're a fan of the show, you already know. So
that's right. That's right.
Well. Congrats again. You're the man. And
thanks, buddy.
Stay safe.
Likewise.
And when I get back out there, let's kick it live in the flesh, you know?
Please. When life resumes, I would love to come see
you.
Come
to a show. You haven't seen me probably ever, but at least, you know, you knew
me
when
I started. Dude, I would love that. Stand-up terrifies me. I would love to try one day not to do what you do and start a career, but just to experience the terror and the panic of that.
We'll do Gotham is the club. It's like my home club when I go out there, right, in Chelsea?
Yeah.
Unbelievable room. My buddy Joey McIntyre, New Kids on the Block, lives out there, and he came out to see every time I'm doing shows. And he's always the same thing. He always wanted to try it. And I go, dude, do 5 minutes before me and bring me up on the Sunday show, which is like the latter of the shows. So he does get some laughs. It's fun. He just wanted to flex the muscle. You can for sure do that if you want to, man. You know,
take one of these days.
It can even be a tight. It can even be 1 minute. It can even be one joke.
I'm down. I can do it. I'll stretch one joke for 5 minutes. Watch this.
Nobody said you're going to do five, but I think if you do one, dude, by the way,
60
Seinfeld,
seconds
on the last
60 seconds,
the last time I was there 2 times ago, Seinfeld, it's like he goes to all the clubs, but it's his like favorite club. So Chris Mazzilli, the owner, calls me up. He's a buddy of Seinfeld's. He goes, Seinfeld wants to come in, work out for his new special. This is the one he did before this one, the one he taped at the comic strip where he started. And he's like, he wants to come in and do like 20 before you. I'm like, he goes, is that cool? I go, has anyone ever said no? He's like, no. I go, I kind of want to just because. Definitely not going to. So he comes in, does 20 before me, and then I go up, and then and I'm like, boy, thanks for letting this new guy get up and do his thing and whatever. But dude, he was so funny, and he does that all the time, which is so cool. And it's why he's still at the top, because it's one of those things, you can't replace the work, man. And it's a craft that has to be like anything. You know,
a muscle. No, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I love you.
One day. You too, pal. I'll see you at the next stand-up show. I'll be your opener for 60 seconds only.
Okay, good. All right. Thanks, buddy.